Welcome again to College Talk Extra Time. I am Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today will be David Holly, Mike Gregg, and Mike O'Connor. In this episode, we will be discussing the 1-1 draw for Fulham at Hillsborough against Sheffield Wednesday yesterday. Before we do that, I always have to welcome my College Talk co-host, and it looks like I might have everyone here. I'll start with you, David. How you doing, my friend? You were at the match, so definitely looking forward to talking to you about this.
Yeah, no, it's... It was good. I sat with Mini Ruiz and Mike Gregg, but I promise you we haven't colluded on any scores or anything, so it will be our own honest opinions when it comes up. And I'm glad I'm not called Mike, because it's going to be very confusing as well.
It will be. And now I'm going to bring on Mike Gregg. Mike, David told me before we started the show that you sat next to him, so that must have been a very interesting match to watch the two of you guys together, along with, as he said, Mini Ruiz.
Oh, well, somebody has to look after him. You know, he's getting old. And
How you doing, Mike? How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm good. I wouldn't say it was a good game, but it was good to sit with Dave and watch the game as it transpired and... Yeah, looking forward to talking about it as well. I think our views are slightly different on a few things. But looking forward to the show.
Yeah, listen, I'm looking forward to getting your views. As I told David offline, I watched it this morning. You know, bits and pieces coming back from Washington, D.C. I was actually in Washington, D.C. over the weekend. And now I'm back home, and I was looking forward to doing the show with you guys. But before we do that, we do have one other College Talk co-host, and that would be my friend Mike O'Connor. Mike, how are you doing?
Not too bad, Russ. How are you?
I am doing well, my friend. I'm looking forward to doing this show with you. You indicated to me that you were able to watch it this morning.
I absolutely was, yep.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to talking to three of you guys about this, and let's get going. Let's start here. You know, it's funny because I usually start with opening thoughts, and I definitely want to get that. But I want to talk about one thing, get it off the table. I've watched many matches in my lifetime. You know, again, I'm here in New England, and the pitch at Gillette Stadium is horrible because it's a natural surface. David, the pitch at Hillsborough was disgusting. Let's just start there.
No, it was. I mean, it was the worst pitch I've seen in all season and probably for a while, and it completely and utterly, you know, was a leveler in some ways. It made it very difficult to play good football. So, in a way, the selection, I think, favoured that, and it was always going to be the case the ball maybe be off the ground more with Matt Smith and the team. And I think the decision to leave out Brian Ruiz was completely and utterly justified, because it's not a game for anyone who wants to play football on the deck. It really wasn't. It was a real old-fashioned man's game, huff and puff, strong challenges, booting the ball forward. And obviously that's for Wednesday as well. It was, you know, and they struggled to cope with the situation, really, as far as I saw. It wasn't just Fulham. Wednesday really struggled as well. And they play on it every week. One side was particularly bad, as Mike pointed out to me, because of the way the shade was. One side was a little bit better than the other, but, you know, it was awful. It was bumpy and it was grassless and everything else. So it made it very difficult to play good football.
No, definitely, David. And when I watched back, you know, you could tell. And listen, it's bad for both teams. So let's just start there. But what's interesting, like you just said, you know, Sheffield Wednesday were struggling on it as well. So this wasn't just a Fulham problem. This was a problem for both teams. And, Mike, I want to ask you, you know, again, I had heard about this. I had seen video of the pitch beforehand. I knew it was going to be bad. Let me ask you, did you think it was going to be that bad?
No, not really. I mean, Kavanagh did an interview earlier in the week when he spoke about how bad the pitch was, and that was obviously, as David said, part of the game plan, if you like, going into it, that it was that bad, and he's right. I mean, after years of Premier League pitches, and to be fair, the other Championship pitches I've seen this year have been decent, but that was very bad, and in a way, sort of summed up the ground. I mean, Hillsborough, you know, it's one of the biggest grounds outside the Premier League. It's, you know, we know it's held big games in the past, FA Cup and various other games, but it's a bit of a throwback stadium. It's definitely a 1970s, 1980s stadium, and the pitch is showing that. And obviously, investment-wise, it's just not gone into that club. And there's a massive stand on the right-hand side, the main stand, as you're looking at it from the away end. And it's just obviously always in shadow, that side of the pitch. And that obviously has an effect. But, yeah, it was a poor, poor pitch. And apparently Blackpool's is even worse, so we look forward to seeing that next month. But,
fantastic. But really, fantastic. And it's funny, Mike, because I did see a tweet from you calling it a beach, and it definitely looked like Fulham and Sheffield Wednesday were playing on a beach. You know, that's the way it looked. And like you mentioned, I've heard that about Blackpool too. And, you know, again, this is, I guess, what happens when you go down a division. We're going to be dealing with some of these very bad pitches. This one was the worst I've personally have ever seen, but I'm sure you guys have seen worse. But this one was pretty bad. Mike O'Connor, what were your thoughts when you actually saw the pitch? You know, again, you probably heard about it beforehand. Was it as bad as you thought it was, you know, going into it?
Yeah, I actually thought it was worse when I saw it because, I mean, if the home team, who it's their pitch and they're having trouble playing on it as well, I mean, it really shows how poorly maintained that pitch was. And as David pointed out, like a player like Ruiz, anyone that wants to play with their feet, I mean, he would never be able to do that. Every second step was a bump in the pitch or, it wasn't flat. It seemed just completely disgraceful, to be honest, to be a professional ground. And I know that the groundsmen, I was reading up on it before and afterwards, they did the best they could with the time they had. But, yeah, it was really, really rather appalling to see that. I'm just really surprised that Sheffield Wednesday, I don't know how long their pitch has been that poor, if it's been for a few games or been that much longer, but I've never been to the ground myself, so I'd have to ask someone who's been more often. But yeah, that pitch, it just basically the game overall was a scrappy game, and it definitely came down to a huge factor being the playing surface.
Yeah, Dave and I were talking off air, and I said, you know what, we can't blame the pitch for the result. David disagrees with me. We could talk about that while we go through the show. But the one thing, basically the way I looked at it, it's bad for both sides. But I actually think Fulham dealt with it better than Sheffield Wednesday, which is very interesting to say. But no, it definitely is a factor. It's not the only factor, but it definitely played a factor in this match. There's no question about it. That's why I wanted to start the show talking about it. Because I don't think we can go through 90 minutes of talking about it and not talk about the actual field, the pitch, because it was just horrible. And, you know, again, I complain about the New England Revolution playing on an artificial surface, and I would take that 10 times over what Fulham and Sheffield Wednesday played on Saturday. I mean, at least there's some bounce. I mean, this is terrible. Anyways, let's get into the match. And Mike, I'm going to start with you. Just your opening thoughts on this 1-1 draw that you and David watched at Sheffield Wednesday.
Well, it's a, you know, it's an away game on a difficult pitch. It's a point game. I wouldn't wish anyone to have actually sat there and watched the game, to be honest, in the freezing cold. It was a poor quality game, not helped by the pitch. All the players, to be fair, you know, the team we put out, but we'll talk about that later. But yep. It was just above the quality of the Millwall game, basically because we scored. But it was, it wasn't a nice game to watch. The first half sort of just passed us by. There was a couple of injuries. Wasn't an awful lot going on. And the second half livened up a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, it's a point game against the teams above us, but unfortunately, you know, Wigan have won, so we've ended up, you know, we were 8 points clear, now we're 6 points clear, so
right. We
didn't really gain anything in that sense of the word, but it was a resolute performance, I would say, and you know, a little bit back to basics, and I think David mentioned basic football, and it was a throwback to, you know, lower division games and just get the ball forward, and yeah, I mean, it was a long trip back, but I was happy with a point in the end. And I think that's all you can do in this league is, you know, just these last 9-10 games is just pick up any points you can anyhow.
I agree with that, Mike. That's why it's funny because, Again, I was just getting updates on my phone, and you know, again, luckily I got the update when Matt Smith scored, because I'm thinking, oh, you know, you can't lose this match. At least get a point. And I think a point on the road at this venue against this team is a good point. Like you said, at this point of the season, we'll take anything that we can. So I'm not going to look bad on a point, and I have to give David Holly credit. He predicted the score, so congratulations, David. And what were your thoughts about the 1-1 draw that you predicted?
Well, if you remember on Thursday, I think I said in our current situation, I'd be happy with the point and the 1-1. So I guess I have to be happy, especially as, you know, we came from behind. I think we finished the stronger of the two teams. If anyone was going to win it at the end, it would have been us. Because, strangely enough, we switched from the 4-4-2 to the diamond once we made the substitutions.
Right.
And I think we actually did look a bit more dangerous at that point, which is, you know, it's weird. It's really weird.
We're going to talk about that, David. We're definitely going to talk about that when we break down the match. But yes, that's one of the interesting parts of all this, is the substitutions and the changing of the formation. But go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, it was, some of it was quite endurable, because some of it reminded me of, you know, the good old days, so to speak, and maybe the sort of football, the level I play at, and it was more akin to that. So there were some real good old challenges went in there as well, partly because it was difficult to control the ball as well as, you know, as anything else. But I think, you know, and the ref, we're talking about that age, I thought the ref handled the game very well. He let it go wherever possible, but he pulled it up. He was firm when he needed to be. So there were enjoyable parts, and the basic star, as you know, as we alluded to, the 4-4-2, it did a job, and it was almost a match I missed, actually, because I don't know, Sheffield Wednesday is quite a long way outside the city centre for Sheffield, and it's served by buses and trams, but the trams got cancelled. We were on a tram and we got kicked off because there was a crash somewhere, so me and Mr. Mini Ruiz had to go and run like hell. And then on the way back, because it was like 10 minutes injury time, cumulative injury time, the match didn't finish till about 5 o'clock. And we were on a booked train, and we had to go like hell. We made it by 1 minute. Otherwise, we would have been still in Sheffield tonight, because it was a non-changeable ticket. So it was a real, quite an eventful day getting to and from the ground. But no, I actually did enjoy it. I enjoyed it for the kind of rudimentary football that there was. It was something different, I suppose, to what you're used to seeing. As I say, I think Mike said, we probably coped better with the conditions, if anything, more than Sheffield. They really didn't cope that well with it. Even with Zlatan Ibrahimovic up front, or whatever he was called.
Very, very interesting take there, David. And I look forward to really breaking down this match with all three of you. That the first half was uneventful. We're going to touch on that very little. I'll just mention that to start off. But I look forward to going through this with you. Mike, like we've talked about, you and I watched the replay. But overall, I just want to get your thoughts on this match and the result for Fulham.
I think a point is a fair result. I think it's a very fortunate point for us, because although we finished the game the stronger team, and as David pointed out, we looked more likely, if anyone was going to win it, it would be us at the end. I also feel that we really weren't deserving. I don't think either team was deserving of a victory, and I think a 1-1 draw is very, very fair between the two sides and the way the game played out. It didn't have much skill or finesse in it. It really was just a down and dirty, heavy tackling match, and I think overall our boys coped with it very well, especially with Turner being given a start right off the bat. So you remove Bodrov to see how that plays out. We don't have Lasse Vigen Christensen in there. Kavanaugh is only playing, what, his fourth or fifth game for us since coming back from injury, like in total for the season. So, you know, really uniquely for this team and with the changing of formation, I think Kit actually did a pretty decent job overall managing it, especially with that new face being thrown in defense. And overall, I think it was a fair result.
Okay, good stuff there, Mike. And listen, I look forward to really getting into this. You know, again, like you said, this wasn't a picture-perfect match, but there are definitely things that we should be talking about. And, Mike, I'm going to start with you. What were your thoughts when you saw the starting 11? And again, as David has mentioned to me, he tweeted to me about Brian Ruiz being left out. I believe Gentleman Jim said that he believed that it was partially injury-related. So, again, I haven't heard anything confirmed on that about Brian Ruiz, but he was left out of the squad. So just curious your thoughts on the starting 11.
Which Mark are we talking to here?
I'm sorry, Michael Connor. I knew I was going to do this.
No problem. Ruiz being, you know, it was kind of surprising not to see him there, and I haven't read anything about an injury. And I'd like to think, you know, every few days prior, I look at various websites to see different kind of rumors that have happened from people watching the training ground, and I haven't read anything about Ruiz being injured. So I really wasn't too concerned he wasn't there, one, because it was a game unbefitting to him, but also, you know, sometimes you have to make the decision to change the player. Maybe he had a poor week on the pitch. Maybe he did get maybe the flu or something. We don't know. But overall, I was just really happy to see Smith McCormick pairing up front. I mean, regardless, we were missing Christensen and Ruiz. My main focus was seeing those two back together and seeing what they can do. So I really wasn't too worried about Ruiz, but now that you bring it up, I hadn't read anything about any sort of injury to him. And he wasn't even on the bench, which is actually, I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, listen, it was an interesting situation, and, you know, like probably many thought, I just thought it was strategic, but when I watched the replay, Gentleman Jim talks about it, and, you know, again, it was him talking, you know, believed that it was a slight injury, nothing major, and that he could be involved in the Leeds match. So I don't think it's anything major. It was just interesting that he mentioned that he thought it could be, I'm paraphrasing a little bit because I don't know exactly how he put it, but you know, he did talk about Brian Ruiz not being included, that he believed that there was a possible slight injury of some kind. So, I hadn't seen anything. That's why I was surprised when I listened back to the replay to mention that. David, what were your thoughts when you saw the starting 11? I know that Ruiz stuck out with you, and you thought that it was strategic. Maybe, you know, again, I'm just going based on what I listened to from the replay, but what are your thoughts on the starting 11?
Well, I thought at last some common sense, and I thought Alan Kerbyshe has obviously made his mark here that, you know, they've switched to a traditional lineup, and it's a twofold thing, because obviously we've had this debate before that, you know, in the standard 4-4-2, it's hard to fit Ruiz anyway, you know, it's hard to put him in there. I mean, where would you put him in? But I thought, this is actually brilliant. They're using their brains. You know, there's no way Ruiz could play on this pitch. It would not suit him. It would be bad for the team. It would be bad for everything. A cold, hard place up north does not suit him. And I thought, great, they've actually used some brains. They're giving him a rest, maybe saving him for Leeds, saving him for a better pitch or something like that. I mean, if they've left him out only because of an injury, then they would have been idiots had they played him. They really would, because, it's not that sort of pitch. And you know, the lineup for me, there was a little bit of conjecture. You know, was it going to go? How was it going to come out? I think even on the Fulham app, I think Mini Ruiz showed me that they actually showed it as a 3-5-2 with Hoogland as one of the back three. But no, it was a straight 4-4-2.
Right.
With Richards at right back and Stafford at left back and Hoogland and Kavanagh in front and Park and Tony Cliff in the middle. So, you know, it was as close to sort of a standard 4-4-2 as I've seen for a long time, really. Probably the last time I saw that was actually up not far away at Rotherham when we played there.
Yeah.
So it was, we've gone out to sort of, you know, be strong and solid across the park, two, you know, fairly defensive central midfielders, width, you know, and then up front, obviously. And although it was a 4-4-2, of course, McCormack, he likes to move all over the place, drop a bit short here and there, duck and dive, you know, get the ball in different places. But I thought, you know, I think we actually started quite well, and it looked quite a good formation, whereas probably we then obviously in the middle of the game had our worst spell and then finished stronger. So I was happy with what they were doing and trying to achieve. It was sort of a back to the basis. I did feel a bit sorry for Bodiroff, I suppose, because he ultimately ended up being, you know, perhaps the scapegoat, although he has played more games than everyone else, I think. So maybe just really didn't need a rest. But there wasn't a lot of other options they could do to play this sort of lineup. Not really, because You know, as we know, there is a lack of out-and-out wide players. There is really no one else to play wide left. I mean, obviously, had Amabieta been available, they would have had an extra option on the left there. On the right, not many. And the strange thing was, and I think I said to Mike during the match, there's no way they can bring Patrick Roberts on here. I couldn't really see it happening because, again, you know, he likes to run and dribble with the ball, and it just, perhaps on the left wing, the way we were attacking second half, perhaps it would have it'd been an option for him there because it wasn't as bad. But, you know, it really was a match where you were limited by the formation, by the pitch, and the,
right.
and the tactics you wanted to play. But for us, because we had Matt Smith up there, we were less reliant on kind of the dribbling, and we had, you know, more chance to get the ball off the deck, I suppose. So it wasn't probably as bad as it might have been, you know.
Okay. Okay, good stuff there, David. Good stuff. And, Mike, I want to go to you because I know you are on top of everything Fulham. Not that David isn't, but again, I'm curious because I was surprised when I listened back this morning to the Brian Ruiz talk. I've not seen anything on Twitter. I've not seen anything mentioned when he brought that up. Have you seen anything related to Brian Ruiz and injury? And also your thoughts on the starting line, because I've seen nothing. That's why I wanted just to bring this up because, again, you know, I was trying to figure out why he wasn't included, and David brought up a good reason that it was strategic, but maybe it wasn't strategic. Maybe it was partial strategic. Maybe it was also precautionary because he was dealing with something.
I haven't seen anything, and it might have been a small knock, but yeah, given the pitch and everything we saw, it made sense not to play him anyway. And
okay.
There's always the view that away from home, he's not as effective. And also, changing formation, you know, where would you have fitted him in? So
that's a good point.
I wasn't that shocked not to see him. And I suppose the test will come if he's fit on Wednesday to see whether he can fit in with, you know, with Smith and McCormick, because I'm not totally convinced that can work. But no, I haven't seen anything apart from what you mentioned. You know, somebody did say somewhere he had a slight knock, but nothing more than that, really.
Yeah, and that's all that again, gentlemen, Jim made it sound like. So that's why I thought it was, like, twofold, you know, like you said, Mike, you know, it was probably partial, strategic, partial, just being precautionary, maybe, like you said, a slight knock. And that's why I don't think he was included. But you bring up a good point. Where is he going to play in a 4-4-2? We know that again, his best role is in a diamond behind the striker, or even if you want to have him, you know, in a 4-4-1-1. But I wouldn't want to, you know, again, I think his best role is when they have him the top of the diamond. That's he's best central. So, again, where are you going to have Brian Ruiz? And just, you know, just an interesting part of this. But I agree with David, and I agree with all three of you, basically, that that maybe this wasn't a match for him. Maybe this was partially strategic. But I wasn't against the lineup at all when I saw it. So, all right, guys, let's move on. And like I mentioned, going through this match, and Michael Connor mentioned it, the first half was just, you know, again, there's really not much to take from the first half. It was really just a dribs and drabs of just going back and forth. They're really not enough to really, you know, to really for me to really touch on. So I'm gonna take us right over to the second half. And Mike Gregg, I'm gonna start with you. Let's talk about this because in the 55th minute, let's go right to their opening goal by Stevie May again. This is I guess you could say coming play off of a corner kick, but just talk about this goal that gave them the lead early in the second half.
Yeah, I mean it was it's right in front of us, and the ball's sort of bouncing around and it goes out wide, and I mentioned to Dave at the time that I thought Hoogland was a bit slow in sort of getting out to him, but yeah, I mean it was. Yeah, it was frustrating because it was almost in slow motion. Comes in and again we're letting in silly crosses in and not making the headers, not getting to the ball first. And it wasn't unsurprising, I suppose, even with, you know, a new centre back in the team. for us to let a goal in like that. It's become, you know, carbon copy of so many that we've let in. You know, going back, I know we don't want to talk too much about the first half, but I think we should do, really. It was
okay.
It was dire. No, it was dire. And it was broken up with a couple of injuries. You know, it's made the game run for another 7 or 8 minutes over time. But the fact was, you know, we put out this formation and, you know, it was knock the ball long, knock it diagonal. It was all percentage football. And people are going to have to get used to that with Smith playing. You know, there's always the argument, oh, you have a big man up front, you can play down the wings. But when you're playing with basically six defenders on the pitch, you know, the option ball is to just knock it forward, and that's what we were doing. And that's partly why it was dire. You know, the pitch was bad, but also our football was not good in the first half, or pretty much for the first 70 minutes. And, you know, that's what we're going to have to deal with for the next, you know, 9 games now, because it looks set as if, you know, Smith, I've never had a go at Smith as a player. He is what he is, and he scored a couple of goals. But people are going to have to get used to this kind of football, if you like, because it's going to be a fight, and it's going to be all about getting the ball forward to them and for us getting the knockdowns. And what we saw was he might reach the ball and he might get the knockdowns, but we don't really have the players, especially the way we were set up yesterday, to follow up and get shots in on target, which again was, you know, was one of our failures.
Very good point about the shots on target, Mike. We're definitely going to talk about that when we go to Stat Attack. I'm glad that you mentioned that. And listen, fair enough for you to talk about the first half, because, again, you really nailed what's going on here. You know, basically the change of philosophy, like you said, long ball football, we probably are going to be seeing a great deal about it and need to get used to it, and that's probably part of the reason why it was such a dire first half. Very good point by you on that. All right, Michael Connor, I'm going to go to you because, again, this game had an opportunity to possibly get away from Fulham, and if it wasn't for two saves by Marcus Bettinelli around the hour mark, talk about both of these saves that, again, really, you know, kept Fulham in this match.
I mean, these saves are very, you know, they happen too often. I mean, without Marcus being in goal, and let's just say we had another keeper in there that was just slightly less talented than he is, especially at such a young age, and being straight, you know, his first year playing playing on the first, you know, the starting 11. This season would look a lot different than it did. In fact, we have relied heavily on Marcus Bettinelli throughout the season to come up with some outstanding saves. And to me, although we're still in 20th position, we've had plenty of goals scored on us, I don't think that the majority of them have come because of inexperience on his part. They've definitely been because of our inability as a defensive unit to stop these kinds of chances and simple goals from coming in, like what Stevie May scored. He probably should never have scored that goal with the amount of defenders that were around him. So Marcus Bettinelli, both these saves in this game are just, to me, they're the kind of saves I've started to expect from him. And without him, I don't know where we would be in the table or what our goal differential would look like. But this young man's ability to react so quickly and be able to have great positioning, definitely years ahead of his experience level, have really benefited us, and we need to do our best to hold on to him, because if we can hold on to him, he could develop into, to me, potentially international English goalkeeper, eventually maybe playing in the World Cup if he can maintain this level of progress that he's doing. But, yeah, he's saved us countless times, and for me, he's really been one of the true unsung heroes of this team.
No, good stuff there, Mike. And, you know, I really wanted to single out this time here again, because I think it's pivotal. You know, again, if they score here 2-0, I don't think Fulham come back from it. And, again, Marcus Bettinelli steps up, you know, and we're so used to seeing it. But, you know, he has his moments. You know, every goalkeeper is going to have their bad moments, but there are so many more positive moments from Marcus Bettinelli that, you know, again, the bad moments, you know, again, you got to deal with the growing pains, but it's so much more positive for me. So that's why I wanted to talk about that. All right, David, it's time to talk about the double change. I want to get your thoughts on this, okay? On come Collie Woodrow and Seiko Fofana off. go Tim Hoogland and Sean Kavanaugh in the 68th minute. Let's talk about this. I want to get your thoughts and just overall, how much did this change the game, this substitution? Listen, we've been critical of Kit making changes before. Is this a positive change for Kit in this game?
Well, at first it looked like there was going to be just the one change. And we saw that Corley was coming on, and we thought, well, how is this going to change then? What are they going to do with this here? And I thought, no, he's not going to change Matt Smith, surely, because obviously that his style of play was quite effective. He was getting winning all the headers, really, and getting them down. It was just they weren't quite falling in the right place necessarily, or people were getting on the end of them. And I thought, well, he's not going to take McCormack off. So I thought, well, maybe Kavanagh, because he was having a quiet game. But how will that change the system? And then suddenly up pops Fofana as well, and off come both the wide men. So I think it was more a virtue of a decision to change the formation rather than particularly the individuals. You know, cause I don't think Hoogland had a bad game. He was, you know, up and down there and did his work okay. But it was an obvious decision to change, you know, the way we played. So we went back to the diamond effectively, although Mike said it wasn't the diamond. Mini Ruiz says it was. So, you know, I answer to Mini Ruiz more. But it was something like that anyway. We went to having, obviously, Parker in the middle with it was Tunnicliffe on the left side and Fofana on the right, and McCormack dropped to kind of the attacking midfield role, and Corley Woodrow went up front with Matt Smith. So there was a clear, I mean, you know, you can call it what you want to call it, I suppose, in terms of whether it was a diamond, whether it was a 4-3-1-2. But it was a clear shift in tactics. That's the main thing. We took both wide men out, and we replaced them. We went more narrow, but we had that extra man in the middle. And you know, it's one of these strange things that there's days where it seems to work. There's games where it has worked for us to switch to the diamond. Actually, I think it's worked more when we switched to the diamond than when we started with it sometimes. I remember that game at home where we started 4-4-2 and then we switched to the diamond. We were a lot better. Obviously, the Derby match, we did play with the diamond and we won that one. So it doesn't always fail. And I think we looked a lot better. And Fofana, despite, you know, I was a bit worried. I said to Mike, he'll get himself sent off if we're not careful, because sometimes his control's not very good. And I could just see the ball getting overrun and him lunging in on someone. And he did get himself booked, actually, quite early on. But Fofana actually did look quite dangerous, and he seemed to offer something that we didn't have before. And obviously, we had, with McCormack, was causing a nuisance himself anyway, and Corley Woodrow up there, and Corley, of course, had a part in our goal. So I think it was a good change in effect, that it made us look better and sharper. You know, on another day it might not have done, but just for whatever reason it seemed to work for us, and as I say, we finished the game stronger, and I think had there been, you know, a lot more play, we could have won it.
Okay, very interesting take there, David. And Mike Gregg, I want to go right back to you, because it sounds like you and David have a little disagreement on the formation, but I want to get your thoughts on that and also the change, because I think the change, you know, again, these substitutions changed the match, I guess you could say. So I want to get your thoughts on the impact of these substitutions in the 68th minute.
I mean, it was, you know, one down, he needs to make a change. It wasn't really working what we were doing, and we were a little bit surprised, I suppose, to see a double substitution, given Simons' record of making subs. But, so we changed to a 4-3-1-2 anyway, and with Parker holding and Fofana on the right and Tunnicliffe moved to the left, it wasn't a diamond, but... But yeah, it was that kind of formation, and Ross, you know, went behind the front two, and Fofana gave us some extra legs in midfield to get forward. You know, he covers that ground so quickly, and he had a couple of, you know, decent runs down the right, and you know, again with him, it's that final product. But you know, he did a good job, and actually it raised Tunnicliffe's game as well. He found himself a little bit more released to go forward as Parker sat more and sort of broke up their play. So definitely had an effect, and we finished the game stronger after getting the goal, and, you know, could have won it, arguably, you know, there's no doubt about
right.
that. But It wasn't the right game to play. I would have liked to have seen Roberts, obviously, but it wasn't the right game for a tricky winger, not on that pitch. And I was still surprised maybe one more sub wasn't made, but, you know, I suppose it would have been one of the strikers who would have, you know, would have been Smith or Ross to go off. But, it worked well. And as David says, you know, sort of odd that, you know, we went back to... his sort of tried and tested formation, and it actually looked a lot better. But maybe that had something to do again with the pitch. You know, I mean, the pitch was pretty bad throughout, but you know, actually bringing players maybe inside a little bit more instead of on the bare wings. You know, maybe that worked for us a little bit, because we did attack more with Tunnicliffe and Fofana, but. So, and Woodrow did a good job as well. You know, he was involved in the goal, but I felt Fofana was the big difference, you know, along with the formation. I just felt his
excellent
energy and everything offered us more.
No, listen, Mike, I'm glad that you brought up Fofana. I'm definitely curious your thoughts when we rate him, because I thought he stood out. You know, I'm glad that you definitely singled him out. And, you know, it's funny because I've been, you know, clamoring for changes, you know, when things aren't working. And this is, you know, again... You know, listen, we can say, you know, you know, we can criticize Kip when things go wrong. But when they, you know, when things happen to work out, you know, we have to say, hey, you know, this time it went right. You know, we should mention, that's why I wanted to get your thoughts. And Michael Connor, I want to get your thoughts on this, too, because watching back at this, you know, I watched the replay, not like the two guys that we're talking to. You know, we're watching a replay. I can notice a huge change and the level of play from Fulham. So I'm curious your thoughts from the substitutions on of the play of Fulham, and how much do you think come down to these substitutions?
Yeah, I said it before on the show that I'm not a huge fan of Fofana. I think that he makes too many of his end products are kind of, you know, they messes up on them. His touch isn't too great. I think he tries to do too much. But this was a game where when he was introduced, I at first, again, was skeptical. I was like, oh, gosh. Like, you know, I personally, again, I'm biased. I don't from the moment I saw him, I didn't really like his play. But he definitely stood out, and he changed the game for us for sure. Woodrow helped provide that extra bit of grit and attacking mentality, where every time we went forward, you would see Woodrow making the run of the box. He ran right at the defenders. He at least forced the defenders to pay attention to him and try and force them to actually defend against him. Because someone like Woodrow, when he runs at you, you have to at least give one guy off to mark him. Otherwise, he's going to run straight, get a through ball, and score. And as for Fofana, you've also added now a bit of flair and finesse that this game has not seen yet. Because, again, we're doing the more of the hoof ball, kind of the tough tackling, the very direct approach. And with someone like Fofana coming in, now you don't really know what's going to happen, especially if we're starting to play out wide. I agree with Mike that the wing play probably wasn't the best idea because of how poor the pitch was. However, that being said, Fofana really, regardless of the situation, he really made the best of it. And I think he added a bit of mystery to some of our attacks. So I really, really thought that these two substitutions were very effective in what they did, and definitely helped lead up to our goal-scoring opportunity and the chances we had at the end to win it. In fact, at the end, Woodrow got himself into several extremely good positions that had he been passed the ball into the box, he was open for a shot. And so that's a little frustrating at one point, especially with McCormick not looking out to a little bit of width in the box and passing it to Woodrow. So I think Kit made two very good substitutions here, and he's learning from a lot of the error of his ways in previous matches. But I really was also surprised that we didn't see a third substitution, maybe around the 80th minute with Roberts coming on, simply as a little bit of speed to attack the defense as well.
No, good take there, Mike. I really appreciate your take on this. All right, let's move on. Let's now go to the goal. David, I'm going to give you the honors of describing this goal. And, again, it's a goal by Matt Smith from Ryan Tunnicliffe, originally started by Colley Woodrow. I want you to talk about the goal, but I'm going to ask you outright. Okay, I've watched this several times. Stuart Gray, the manager of Sheffield Wednesday, is still angry about this. Let me ask you, did Ryan Tunnicliffe dive?
I can't say. It didn't look like a dive to me, but it was at the far end because Fulham were attacking the far end second half. So it's impossible to say. I haven't seen the replay. I'm going purely on what I saw.
Okay.
I remember rightly... Scott Parker punted the ball forward and it went to Woodrow, held it up, he did quite well, slipped it into Tunnicliffe. Tunnicliffe went down, but and while everyone was kind of wondering what was happening, he's then sort of poked the ball across. Matt Smith was there, banged it in, looked like it hit the bar and went in. But, you know, it was almost a delayed celebration, actually, I think, because it was at the other end from Fulham fans. So we didn't know straight away that it had gone in. But we saw the players and obviously we were very delighted. But I didn't see anything to make me think it was definitely a penalty or it was definitely a dive.
Okay. Interesting. That's why I wanted to talk to you guys. Now, Mike, you're sitting right next to David. Do you see anything that indicated to you that this is a dive? I'm not saying that it was. I'm just want to get your thoughts on this because, again, I like the fact that regardless that Tunnicliffe kept playing and got the ball to Matt Smith that gave Fulham the goal. But I'm curious what you were thinking watching this live.
My initial thoughts were it wasn't a penalty. And having looked at the replay, I don't think it was either. And to be fair to Tunnicliffe, he's down and then up again straight away. So it's not as if he's gone down, you know, looking to turn around to the ref and go, ref, penalty, you know. I mean, he's down and up straight away. So if their players froze thinking the ref was going to blow, then, you know, that's their fault. So no, I don't think it was a dive, but I didn't think it was a penalty either. So I think it was just... maybe he lost his footing or, you know, maybe there was a touch, but not every touch has to lead to a free kick or a penalty at all. So I think praise to Woodrow because he took the ball, you know, took the ball well, kept it and then laid it off to Tunnicliffe and, you know, he did well to battle his way through and, you know, Smith was there in the six-yard box, which is exactly where a goal scorer should be, you know, looking to pick up these bits and pieces and... you know, I mentioned, you know, Michael mentioned about Woodrow having a good few chances and or in good positions and not receiving the ball. And the culprit there was McCormick. And I think David backed me up on this one. He was yesterday, he divvied a bit, kept the ball too long. And there was a few times he should have laid it off, not only to Woodrow, but to other players as well. He wasn't quiet on his game yesterday, which is... becoming a bit of a, you know, every week he needs to do something, McCormick. He needs to find something. I even saw someone today saying he should be dropped. I'm not sure about that, but he needs to pick up his game for these last nine games.
No, listen, I agree with you on that, Mike. And I'm glad that you described it the way that I watched it. You described it perfectly the way that I watched it on the replay, meaning that Tunnicliffe goes down. He gets right back up. Mike, and he passes it right over to Matt Smith. And that doesn't seem like a guy that's taken a dive. And I'm glad that you described it that way because you know again I saw the comments from Stuart Gray after the match, and I wanted to see it for myself. The one striking part of it is what you described, that Tunnicliffe got right back up, and that you know that to me showed me something, and also showed me a little bit about the player, you know, because, again, you don't give up. You keep moving. I like players that keep on playing. You know, regardless of what you think about Ryan Tunnicliffe so far in his play with Fulham Football Club, the fact that he kept moving led to the goal. You know, again, you know, got us the point. You know, again, if he doesn't do that, if he doesn't get up and pass it over to Matt Smith, we don't score, we don't get anything out of this. So again... you know, that's why I wanted to really talk about it. Is it a dive? Because, again, I've seen it from the Sheffield Wednesday managers claiming it's a dive, but I've watched it a few times, and the one thing that stands out to me is exactly what you just said, Mike. He gets right up. And, Michael Connor, I want to get your thoughts on this because you watched the replay. What did you think when you saw it?
I mean, I can't disagree with what Mike Gregg said here at all. I mean, when I'm watching this, it definitely is not a penalty, but to say that there was absolutely no contact is also false. It wasn't a dive. He was running with pace forward. The player is trying to cut back across him. He nicks his ankles, and Tunnicliffe goes down. If someone's looking for a dive, they end up sprawling, or they put their hands up in the air and look back at the ref. They do some sort of indication to show that, hey, you should be looking at this. This was a foul. Tutcliffe was, I mean, it wasn't even like a pause. He just fell down. The ball was still there. He kept playing. Matt Smith kept playing. And we got a goal because of it. And these are the kind of goals that have actually ended up punishing Fulham plenty of times in the past, where we've been like, where these kind of goals, these ones where our guys freeze up, we think it's a foul, they somehow get this ball in off the crossbar and in. So at the end of the day, I mean, it's shame on you, Sheffield United, or Sheffield Wednesday, I'm sorry, for freezing up. I mean, you just don't do that. You play till the whistle's blown, and there was no penalty, but at the same time, you can't just freeze like that, expecting it to be a penalty. So I think Mike Gregg hit it, the nail on the head.
I totally agree with that, and that's why I'm glad that we could talk about this. And, Mike Gregg, I'm going to go right back to you because you and David both have said you thought that Fulham looked like the team that were more likely to score, and I couldn't agree with you more. They were more dangerous. They were creating everything after that. And I'm going to take you to the 80th minute. This was a golden opportunity for Fulham with Matt Smith once again, but, again, a very good opportunity denied by Lee Westwood. Talk about this.
Yeah, it's he had a chance just like he did last week, really. You know, I mean, just to keep it a beat, but just failed to get it past him. Really, it was a good 10 minutes. We had a lot of pressure at the end there, a few chances, and to be fair, we were defending quite well. And while they were getting down to our end, they weren't really creating much. And Bettinelli, fair dues to the defenders, Stafelidis and a couple of the other ones as well. They were doing their job and allowing the fact that we had three forwards, if you like, on the pitch, to mix it up in that box, and that's where those sort of chances came. So yeah, Smith could have done better, but given that pitch and the way and just the way the game went and the quality of the game, I'm not going to have too much of a go at them. They can't have trusted the run of the ball at all on that. So every time they were touching it, they were probably just thinking, God, don't bobble. But, we had chances. So if we'd won, would we have stolen the game? Yeah, probably. 1-1's a fair result. But, of course, we would have taken it because it's been done to us this season.
Absolutely, Mike.
But, yeah, luck isn't quite there for us yet. But, it was a good way to finish the game, and we all left, fairly happy with that.
No, listen, and that's a good point because we're talking about the last, you said 10 minutes, I could say 10, 15 minutes, where Fulham were really on the front foot, really going for the winning goal. And, again, Ross McCormack had a great opportunity from a set piece, and unfortunately in the 84th minute, his free kick just went over the net. And, David, I'm going to go to you because, again, Fulham were still pushing. That was in the 84th minute. I'm going to take you to the end of stoppage time because Fulham actually had two opportunities in stoppage time in the last minute and, in fact, the very end of this match. Talk about the end. And do you think that Fulham might be able to get that goal winner, that winning goal at the very end?
Well, I'm afraid I've got to blame you, Russ, for this.
Blame me?
Not just for calling the keeper Lee Westwood because he was busy playing golf, but Kieran Westwood was playing yesterday. But
Kieran Westwood.
I'm going to blame you because you said, of course, Matt Smith and Ross McCormack were going to score. And obviously they were listening to the preview show because at the end, Ross McCormack was trying everything to score. I think there were people in better positions, but it was him. And I was thinking, no, please don't let him score. Let's score, but not Ross, because Russ will never, I'll never hear the end of it. And at the end, it really was like that. I think, he was trying to shoot when perhaps he should have laid it off to Woodrow on one occasion, I think. It was a real melee.
So you think they're listening to the show?
Yeah, I know he was. I mean, obviously, we've had Kip listening to the show. Alan Kirbyshee's obviously been listening now because we changed the format and dropped Ruiz or something. And now Ross McCormack's been listening because he's, you had
okay.
him try to score again. And he was trying so hard. He really was.
He was.
And as I say, I think he was a bit greedy. He was a bit greedy at the end. But the ball was all over the place and it could have really gone in. We really could have nicked it at the end there. It was all down that end, and as I said, we've said before, I think, had we carried on, we would have won that game.
Right. No, listen, at the very end, they definitely had some opportunities. And, David, thanks for calling me out because Lee Westwood is a golfer, and that was really a nice Goldman for me. On my way back home, I throw a Goldman on the show. So there we go. Now I know I'm home. That's my major Goldman for the show. All right, guys. Let's move on. Let's now look at the stats because you know, again, I wrote down the stats for this match, and I think they're kind of telling. Let's go through it and see what you guys get out of it. All right, possession. Sheffield Wednesday had 53-47%. Total shots. Sheffield Wednesday had 14 to Fulham's 11. On target, this is interesting. Sheffield Wednesday had 5. Fulham had 4. Shooting percentage, shooting accuracy was the same at 36%. Passing accuracy, actually Sheffield Wednesday was a little higher at 72% to 68%. Key passes, this is an interesting stat that I just really have come upon, and actually Sheffield Wednesday had 9 key passes to Fulham having 7. Fouls, Sheffield Wednesday had 17, Fulham had 12. Corners, Sheffield Wednesday had 5, Fulham had 1. Crosses, they had 22, Fulham had 10. And crossing accuracy, 27% for Sheffield Wednesday and 10% for Fulham. And I'll start with you, Mike O'Connor. What jumps out to you with the stats?
Kind of what jumps out to me here is if we played with a 4-4-2, and yet we only met for a significant chunk of the game, we only managed to have 10 crosses into the box. I mean, that just kind of shows that we've been drilled for so long in this diamond formation under Kit that he starts getting, maybe it is some curvacy in the background trying to influence the way the formation comes out. And our guys just really, our lack of wingers, actual dedicated wingers, and our kind of not so much inexperience, but the fact that we have not played very much wing play this year. We've been focusing more attacking through the central of the pitch through quick passing. It kind of just shows that a team that's usually playing out with wingers in Sheffield Wednesday, they have 22 crosses to our 10, and many times crosses are what score you goals, and that's how they scored their first goal, their goal of the game. So I think it's kind of telling how we have kind of lost sight of wing play and attacking from the wing. I think it's something we need to get back to.
Okay, very interesting there. Talk about the crosses. Mike Gregg, what stands out to you?
Well, actually, we can sort of talk about those crosses because, or lack of them. I mean, when you're playing two full-backs as your wide men, you know, it's very much a 4-4-2, but you could almost argue it was 6-2-2, really, because their job was just to be solid and play that defensive role. And, you know, most of the balls we played were long. You know, I mean, I did some stats online today where I compared our average to what we did yesterday, and, you know, 20% of our football yesterday was long ball, you know, compared to usually, like, you know, 15 or somewhere around that figure. So, you know, and our number of passes we did was way down compared to what we usually do. We're usually somewhere in the mid-400s, and, you know, we're about 370, 380. So it showed that there was definitely a different style that we had. And, you know, it may have been down to the pitch. It may have been down to Smith playing. Well, actually, you know, let's not muck around. It is down to Smith playing, you know, because you could see that the fullbacks and Hutchinson, their job was, you know, get that ball forward and, you know, diagonally on the halfway line, and let's see what happens. The actual stat that got me, considering we have criticised them so much, was actually one of the defensive ones. And they had a lot of crosses, but it's got here that we actually blocked 8 of their crosses. And
okay.
We blocked 8 crosses, and they didn't they didn't block any of ours because we didn't actually make any. But so maybe the job of actually, you know, doubling up with these two fullbacks as the wide men in midfield helped us a little bit in that case, you know,
in
the defensive side. Because that is one of the biggest criticisms that almost every fan has got, is that our fullbacks allow too many crosses in. And so, you know, hopefully they've been working on that, getting tighter to their wide men. And, you know, we'll see the difference as the weeks pan out. And I'm pretty sure, you know, that's Kerbishley watching games from above and seeing the pattern of how our defence, you know, sets up. I mean, certainly yesterday they were much more square and much more in a straight line. They might have had it might have had to do with Turner coming in because he's quite vocal. But, you know, I thought defensively we were in much better shape. And all we need to do is add that little bit extra flair, which we did when we made the subs. So really, for me, it was across the blocks. I mean, you know, it was going to be poor possession when you're playing this type of football. That's without a doubt.
Right.
Tackles, we made 28. So we were definitely getting stuck in. But again, you know, you've got six defenders on the pitch, plus Tunnicliffe and Parker, you know. And Parker was, I'm sure, led the line in the number of tackles he made, because, again, he was pretty immense yesterday, especially in the second half, breaking them all up.
No, good stuff, Mike. And what's interesting, you know, again, I want your rating in a few minutes when we talk about Steph Lewis, but I have to tell you that Gentleman Jim must have said at least three times how well Staff Elite has played in this match. Would you agree with that? You know, again, I'll get your ratings in a little bit. What are your thoughts about how he played? You were talking about the shape. What about Staff Elite just in general?
Yeah, I thought he was quite disciplined yesterday. He had, you know, obviously Kavanagh in front of him, but he didn't really rampage forward maybe a couple of times in the second half. But defensively, I thought he had their winger pretty much sussed out, and did some nice moves second half to, you know, show him up a little bit. But I thought it was a good performance, and he's needed that, really. So he's had a couple of rough games recently, and obviously
right.
got dropped last week for whatever reason. And but he, you know, he's still young, he's still learning, and he's going to be up and down. But yesterday, yeah, very disciplined from him and the rest of the team as well in their defensive responsibilities.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's why I just wanted to bring that up, because that was one of the things that stood out for me watching back was, you know, again, because he kept keying on Stafelidis, so I started watching more of Stafelidis, and I thought he had a solid match, and that's why I just thought I'd mention that to you. David, over to you. What stands out to you from the stats, and then we'll move on. Or did David drop off? David probably dropped off. Okay, he did, and I'm going to bring him right back on. That's my fault. David, I'm sorry, you back with us?
Yeah. Who is it? We've got a dog in the background, have we, at the moment, or some strange noise I heard there.
Okay.
The stats, I suppose the stats for me, it kind of, they say that the result was a fair one, really. That's the first thing, because they are pretty much matched on most things. In terms of crossing, I don't know. We did attempt quite a lot of crosses, but the accuracy was quite poor, and I don't know if any of them really ended up as crosses. There were a lot of balls that were crosses come diagonal balls, like headed towards Matt Smith, really. And it'd be interesting
right.
to see whether they count that as a cross or whether they count that as a more as a pass attempt, really. Because, you know, Mike were talking about it beforehand, that you'll see Matt Smith, he'll peel away to give them an angle to put the ball in for the diagonal for him to win the header and head it down. There were quite a lot of those balls were played in, but no, the stats for me, they showed two fairly evenly matched sides, really. I'm surprised if Sheffield United, Mike's got me going on that one. Sheffield Wednesday, the passing accuracy was better, because I think at times they really struggled with their passing on their own pitch. But nothing that massively stands out and smacks in the face as either being, you know, sometimes we have these stats which are like not representative of what happened. You know, we get these matches where
right.
the possession doesn't seem to match how the play panned out or whatever. But no, I mean, I think it kind of, the stats do paint a fairly honest picture, really, and sum the match up.
Okay. Well, good stuff there, David. I appreciate your take on that. All right. I'm going to go right back to you. Let's now go into rating the players. Let's start with Marcus Bettinelli. Give me a rating for Marcus.
Well, I think Marcus, he did have a generally solid game. He certainly made one very good save where four defenders just let him go and this guy just ran and shot and it looked like he was going to creep in. So a great save there. There was a couple of kind of slight flappy moments. But the thing that stood out for me, unfortunately, Bettinelli, and I know it's part of the pitch, but his kicking was pretty awful yesterday. He doesn't seem to get a lot of power or direction on his kicks. You know, when, not so much the kicks when he's not under pressure, but when he's under a little bit of pressure to clear it. So I'm going to give him 6 out of 10 because he didn't have that much to do. You say one good save, but some of his kicking was a bit awry and it nearly put us in trouble.
Okay, so you're going to go with 6 out of 10. Michael Connor, to you.
For Marcus Bettinelli, are we just doing the goalkeeper himself first? Yep. Marcus, again, we talked about it earlier. He made a few key saves, and had we gone 2-0 down, I don't think he'd come back from it. But that being said, David makes a very, very good point about his kicking, and it seems to be that when he is under pressure, not necessarily from goal kicks, as stated, where he has time, but where you've got someone running at you, he seems to get height with kicks, but not distance. And many times that can actually be a negative effect because some of our players that don't win those aerial challenges and it bounces too close to our goal or they get the possession, it could end up being a quick counter for them from a kick that should be quite easily cleared. So overall, I think Marcus did a solid game. He was his usual self. And maybe he's a little bit nervous because he can't really count on his defenders too much, although he will openly support them. When you have that many goals and shots being hit on target and then goals being scored on you, you start to lose a little bit of confidence in the 4 guys standing in front of you. So overall, I think he gets a 6.5 out of 10 for me. He did his job. He earned his wages for sure. But it definitely is just going to come with experience and time. So overall, a 6.5.
Okay. Fair enough there. All right, Mike Craig, over to you.
Yeah, not much to add, actually. I mean, I'm going to give him a 6 as well. And Mike's quite right about his kicking. And actually, me and Dave had that same conversation yesterday that he tends to put a sort of loop on the ball. It's a very slow kick when he's under pressure. And it goes high with no distance. And it's something he needs to work on in the summer. I mean, the really good goalkeepers now, it's not all about saving the ball, unfortunately. They're almost like a sweeper sometimes. And he needs to improve his kicking of the ball, both drop kicks and when they're on the floor as well. So, but a good solid game, a couple of good saves. I never felt as if he was nervous at all, especially, you know, when he's in front of us. I don't usually sit right behind the goalkeeper, so it was quite interesting watching it from that angle. And, I felt he did okay. 6 out of 10.
Okay, very good there, Mike. And I'm going to go right back to you. Again, this is just for time's sake because I have the 3 of you on here and we only have a half hour left. I'm going to give you the back 4. We're going to do 4-4-2. That's how we're going to do this. So I'm going to give you now Jazz Richards, Mr. Turner, Mr. Hutchinson, and also Mr. Stafalidis.
Okay, Richards, I thought the whole back 4 actually did a good, solid defensive job, and they've obviously been working during the week on various bits and pieces. Richards, he had a couple of knocks, and he was probably the shakiest of the back 4, but I'm going to give him a 6. Stafalidis, I'm going to give a 7. I did actually think he played quite well. And, it was probably the hardest side or the player to play against, especially second half. So I'm going to give him a 7. Hutchinson, I'm going to give him a 6 as well, as usual. His passing, his distribution's not great. You know, but he'd get involved. He'd get stuck in. And Turner, I thought it was a quiet debut by him. He did probably more in the first half than he did in the second half. And, but he's, you know, he's certainly a big lad, and
I was just about to say, Mike, he's a big guy.
Yeah, and everything about him was exactly what I expected: big, no pace, but you know, a presence. And it could have been Dan Burn out there, really. You know, looking at the height of him and everything else. I mean, it's very, very similar players, and you know, that's one thing we haven't touched on. You know, not in the 18, you have to have questions about whether he's going to be around for the remaining 9 or 10 games. But so anyway, Turner, I'm going to give him a 6.5, a decent debut. But I just feel Stafalidis edged it out of the back 4.
Okay, very interesting. David, over to you.
It's funny, actually. I thought Stafford defended quite well, but his distribution or his crosses were poor. I think all our real best crosses were coming really from the other side. A few times he had chances to put balls in the box, and he couldn't beat the first man. He's just very poor. So you needed, obviously, to get them deep to the back post for Matt Smith. So I thought, attacking-wise, he was poor, Stafford. But defensively, there was one very wild clearance that went right across the face of the penalty area almost. But otherwise, he was pretty good. And so, yeah, I'll just give him the six. Hutchison had a few nervy moments for me. But generally solid. He did have, obviously, Zlatan Ibrahimovic to deal with half the time, or that guy he's a big guy, this one, and he plays up front for them, or one of the guys. And I'm going to give him a six as well. It was a standard performance. I think Turner, for me, stood out, actually. Although it was a quiet debut, you know, he ended up getting a bloodied shirt or whatever, had to change his shirt. He wasn't afraid to, you know, put his head in where it hurt. So I'm going to give him 6.5. Jazz Richards, I mean, yes, he did quite well coming forward a few times, linked up well with Hoogland. I think we did look a bit better on that side in the first half, but then that was the side where the pitch wasn't quite as bad. But he was the one who got beaten for the goal, and I don't know, he went down sort of in a bit of a heap. I'm not sure if he was going for the sympathy vote, but he got beaten by, you know, someone who wasn't particularly tall for that header. Saying that, I'm not sure why it was him there and not one of the bigger guys, but for me, I'm just going to give him a 6 as well.
Okay. Very good there, David. All right, Michael Connor, over to you.
I really can't say much more than what's already been said. For Richards, I'll just go ahead and do Richards and Stafford right now. They're both going to get a 6. Stafford, I think he kept their wing play very, very quiet, and I really like that he's an aggressive defender. And, you know, when he goes in for a tackle, a lot of the players, like, they know they've been tackled. He doesn't back down to anybody, but his crossing is rather poor. I mean, we know he has a cannon of a left foot, but just because he can hit it with power, he's not hitting it with accuracy or with much height when it comes to crossing, so that is a little disappointing from him. But overall, I'll be really upset when Stafford leaves at the end of the season, unless we somehow secure him permanently, which I can't see happening. I've really liked him over the rest of the season. But this game, he did his job. He did it fairly well. But going forward, he was lacking a bit. Richards, he's got the pace. I still don't really see the huge upgrade from Grimmer there. But needless to say, he did his job well, much like Stafford. And he provided some of those crosses that Stafford couldn't, kind of as David said. Hutchinson, he gets a 6 as well down there in the center. I love his height, but he does make some errors in judgment when it comes to distribution. That's really been his big kind of disadvantage for me, seeing his play. He does a very good job when it comes to getting up in the air, to heading the ball, and being a physical presence, especially during set pieces. But when it comes to distribution, yeah, he seems to be lacking a little bit of vision, maybe, or some cool-headedness. And overall, Turner on his debut, I think he did quite well, especially just being asked to go straight into the starting 11 to work with four guys he probably doesn't know too well. And I think he gets a 6.5 and was the better of all four defenders for me.
Okay, very good. Very good there, Mike. Very good from all three of you. Real good stuff. All right, Michael Connor, I'm going to go right back to you. Let's now talk about the midfield of Tim Hoogland, Scotty Parker, Ryan Tunnicliffe, and Sean Kavanagh.
For one, I'm really glad to see Hoogland back from his injury. He's been one of my favorite players this year until he was injured, mainly because he just seems to have a personality as well as he loves to get forward. And prior to the injury, we all know he was scoring some goals, which was nice. And I think my highlight of the entire match is when he did a half volley and plastered the guy in the head. I don't know if he actually meant to head that ball away in the first half, or if Hoogland just ripped it and it just happened to hit this guy in the head. But Hoogland's not afraid to shoot, and I really like to see that from him, because he's great. To me, he does a very good job defensively, especially in a midfield role, but he also is able to couple that with some good attacking runs and shots. So Hoogland, for me, gets a 6.5. It wasn't, you know, his greatest game as we've seen him in the beginning of the season, but he's still getting back into it after that long-term injury. Parker, for me, was man of the match. He's going to get a 7.5. He led the line. There are several times where he was just blazing down the center again, leading the boys forward. He's very, very calm under pressure. And despite the pirouettes he does quite frequently, he does end up, successfully getting a pass off or two, or making sure that when he gets stuck in an tackle that he wins the ball back. So Parker's going to get man of the match for me in a 7.5. Tunnicliffe was very, very quiet. He didn't do too much, he didn't do anything too badly, poorly, but he also didn't have a great game until Fofana came on, when he was kind of livened up a bit when Fofana stepped onto the field. So Tunnicliffe's going to get a 6. His passing was all right. He kind of was out-muscled several times. And I don't think that many runs he did were too effective in and around the box. So he's going to get a 6. Kavanaugh is also a 6 for me. He's young. He's trying his best. You can see it. He's working his socks off. And he just needs some solid game time in order to build up some confidence and some continuity with his teammates. Again, he, again, is one that was injured. So overall, the midfield was fine. Nothing too wrong with it. Nothing too great. Parker definitely stood out for me, though.
Okay, fantastic. That was your man of the match. David, over to you for the midfield.
I think I'm pretty similar, really. I think Hoogland did an okay job. First half, it was better because he had slightly better side of the pitch. Second half, not as much.
Oh, lost David there. Guys, I didn't do it. David just dropped off the line. So this wasn't me pulling him off. So hopefully David will be dialing back in. Something probably happened to his connection. David, if you can hear me, please dial back in. Then I'll go over to you, Mike Gregg.
Okay, yeah. Hoogland, I was quite happy to see him sort of start in that position. I marked him very low last week, quite rightly and all. And I have to say, I don't really want to see him at right back again. There was a couple of occasions when he got skinned by their wingers when Richards was slightly out of position. But he did his job as that sort of second right back, right midfielder. He did get down the pitch a couple of times, got involved with things, quieting down as the game went on, but I think that probably had more to do with fitness. So I'm going to give him a 6. He did his job, as we hoped. Kavanagh, I was quite disappointed with, actually. His best contribution was probably a couple of corners. I mean, he's one of the few who can beat the first man we have, but he was out-muscled a couple of times. I know David thinks he's far too slight a player, and there's no doubt he has to get on the old weights machine during the summer, but I know the club rate him highly, and they see him as the long-term left-back, but he's going to have to put a bit of weight on, I think. So for me, he was probably the poorest player, so I'm going to give him a 5. Midfield, Tunnicliffe, you almost want to mark him twice, once before the subs and after. As Michael said, as soon as the change was made and he seemed to slightly move out left, he had a bit more space and got involved, and obviously, battled hard, to get the ball to Smith for him to score as well. And he did his defensive duties as good as anyone. Passing let him down again, as usual. But for me, he was slightly better than a 6, so a 6.5. And Parker, for me, was the man of the match for us. Basically on his second half display. And I'm going to give him an 8 out of 10. He was back to winning tackles like he did against Derby, and he's just showing how important he is to us, really. And he also had a couple of runs into the box, which maybe he could have done a bit better with. But, the old legs made him reach the 18-yard box somehow. But he was in the wars as well. So, proper captain's performance again. So, 8 out of 10.
Oh, very good stuff, Mike. And I'm glad that you brought up the runs into the box, because at the very end of the match, he almost won the game for us, set up the opportunity there. So, again, that guy just keeps going, and he definitely bounced back. I'm not going to disagree with what you guys are talking about. You guys both, Mike O'Connor and Mike Gregg, both have Scott Parker as your man of the match. All right, David, I'm going to bring you back on. I didn't drop you. Maybe Kit Simons or Brian Ruiz got control of the studio. I don't know. I'm just kidding. But But you're back with us, so share with us your thoughts on the midfield once again.
I think from what I've heard that Mike has copied my notes word for word almost, but I'm going to tell you anyway. For me, Sean Kavanagh was the weakest player. He didn't contribute a lot, Kavanagh. He did look a bit lightweight. He was there. He was running around, but, you know, he was the weakest performance we had. Didn't contribute much. I'm going to give him 5. Tunnicliffe, I thought, you know, and I mentioned this yesterday in a tweet to someone or early on. I think Tunnicliffe for me is the new Sidwell, perhaps. He seems to be very popular with the fans because he is a 100% player. But his problem is the consistency. He is a bit reckless in the challenge sometimes. We expect more from him, really. We think, you know, people like him for his effort and his energy because he gives 100% most certainly. It's just whether the quality's there or not. And yesterday, that was kind of, you know, as I say, it was a bit of a two halves for him. I was thinking maybe he's going to get not a very good mark, really, just a very basic mark. And then second half, he seemed to perk up a bit once we went to the diamond, and obviously he was involved with the goal. So overall, I gave him 6.5. Hoogland, who I started with before, hopefully I won't get cut off this time. For me, he was up and down. He had a few good moments. Perhaps he tired a bit. Perhaps the pitch second half wasn't as good for him. He had that really good shot, mind you, that looked to me was definitely flying in the back of the net if he hadn't have hit someone on the way. But for me, sort of 6 out of 10, I think it was a reasonable performance without being spectacular. And, you know, and I've heard the other two, and I was always going to go this way anyway. For me, Scott Parker, most certainly man of the match.
Okay.
You know, it was almost a dangerous pitch, the way the ball was bumping up and doing things, and yet he wasn't afraid. He put his body on the line and everything, Scott. He threw himself in. He drove us forward. And he was, you know, 90 minutes from him. A real captain's performance again once again. And for me, man of the match, an 8 out of 10.
Fantastic. Good stuff. So you all have Scott Parker as your man of the match. Excellent. Okay, David, right back to you. Let's now talk about Ross McCormack and Matt Smith. I'm very curious your ratings for both of these players.
Well, I think Ross, you know, I know Mike gets frustrated with him because he sometimes tries to do too much, and there was one bit where he's tried to shoot from about 40 or 50 yards, and it wasn't the right choice. But he was busy, he was running around, and it didn't suit him the way the ball was running, but still, he got quite a good control on the ball. His dribbling was okay, he was causing them problems, and it was clear that, you know, he was working quite well. He had an understanding with Matt Smith. I mean, in terms of end product, yes, there wasn't enough from him. It wasn't, say, probably the best pitch for him, but I thought he put in a good shift, nevertheless. Just perhaps a bit too greedy at times. So for me, 6.5, because I think he put a good effort in, but he needed to make the right choices sometimes. He didn't do that. Matt Smith, you know, he does what he says on the tin, really. I don't think he really lost the header, hardly. You know, he was strong in the air. He got some great knockdowns. On another day, they would have fallen straight into someone's path and would have been goals. Took his goal. You know, he was in the right place at the right time. It wasn't the most spectacular goals, but he was there, and he's hit the back of the neck again. What more can you say, really? So 7 out of 10 for me.
Okay, very good. Mike Gregg, over to you.
McCormack, and yeah, that 45-yard shot, that really pissed me off, I have to say.
no.
Yeah, apologies for that. But, he was frustrating. He held on the ball too much. And, you know, he's a goal scorer. He's short goals. And he's obviously looking to try and find one. But, you know, if another player's on, then he should be, you know, team first and individual second. So he is trying too much. He had a nice free kick. Thought it was a bit close for him to have a go, but you know, it was still a decent effort. But for me, just 6 out of 10. Just, you know, no end product. And you know, clearly him and Smith play well together. They know what they're doing. But he has to raise his game. Smith, I'm going to give him 7. He scored. He was a handful. You know, you get the ball to him, he's going to win the headers. So the question is, where are they going? You know, or who's picking up the knockdowns and that type of thing. So if you're going to use him, then you've got to look at the rest of the team being as effective and, you know, following up for the second ball and that type of thing. But he is a goal scorer. As I said earlier, he was in the box in the right place. And, you know, that's the difference between someone like him and Rose when you compare him to someone like McCormick. You know, these two guys, they're goal scorers, whereas McCormick is a goal scorer stroke creator. And every team needs a goal scorer. And currently, it looks like Smith is the best one we have.
That's a good point. You know, he does look like a goal scorer, and he is scoring goals, two goals in two games, the last two games. That's very good. All right, over to you, Michael Connor.
You know, when Matt Smith went off on loan and everyone, you said, you know, best of luck at Bristol, have fun. He went off there and he did work and, you know, he scored the goals he needed to. He helped Bristol. Their fans loved him. The day they left, they went on their forums and they were all pretty upset that he was leaving and wishing they could have kept him for longer, if not got him on a transfer. And so when he started playing for us again after being unfairly, he got the red card in his first game, and then everyone kind of ignored him. And, you know, he's not the player with the most finesse. He doesn't have the Berbatov silk. But, I mean, what he's shown in these past two games is the goals may not be pretty, but he'll put them in the net. And at the end of the day, in the situation we're in and where we are, I'll take that every single game. I don't need to see these amazing goals. I don't need to see someone who is on an ESPN top five. I just need somebody who's going to put the ball into the net and score for us, and that's what he's doing. I think that with his height, we are going to have to start going to more of the long ball tactics, and that might not be what people want to see, but I don't think we really have a choice at this point because we're sitting only 6 points atop the relegation zone in the championship. So overall, I think Matt Smith gets a 7 for me. He was where he needed to be. He made runs regardless of where he was, and he got to the ball when he needed to for knockdowns, and unfortunately he was there, and he scored the equalizer. So Matt Smith is a 7. As for Ross, you know, I love Ross. I think that he's a workhorse. I think that he's got a great footballing mind. He sees plays building before they even begin. But this game, he seemed to be really focused on scoring, and he held the ball for far too long at his feet when several times in the box he could have had a quick shot, or Collie Woodrow was out to his left twice, open completely, and he could have made and created another chance there for a goal-scoring opportunity. So, you know, I love Ross, but today in this match, he was too focused on scoring himself, it seems, which I know we want because I've wanted him several times where he should just take the shot. He doesn't, and he looks for the pass. And in this particular game, he did the opposite. He waited too long waiting for the shot, looking for the shot. So Ross is going to get a 6 from me. I really like the guy as a player, but there are several times at the end there where he could have probably sealed the winner for us. And when you come in with that price tag, that's what I'm expecting. So he gets a 6, and Smith gets a 7.
Okay, sounds just like the guys there, which is good. You guys are pretty close on all your ratings, which is very good. All right, guys, we are running short of time, so we got to kind of speed this up. But I do want to get your ratings for Collie Woodrow and Seiko Fofana. And Mike Gregg, I'll start with you on both of the substitutes.
Woodrow, I will give a 6.5, and Fofana, I'll give a 7. It did make a difference coming on. Just felt Fofana was that bit more dangerous. Woodrow held the ball up a couple of times, got in good positions. But, for me, Fofana made quite a bit of difference yesterday, and it'd be nice to see him start on Wednesday.
Well, good stuff there, Mike. Over to you, Mike O'Connor.
I'm actually the opposite. I'm giving Woodrow a 7 and Fofana a 6.5. I really, really like Woodrow's direct approach, and there are several you know, long balls that he got onto the end of in the box, and he helped set up a lot of our play. So I think Woodrow gets a 7 for me. And Fofana, he gets a 6.5. He did some very great things when he came on. He helped liven up the play. But at the end of the day, some of his end product was still not there for me, but it was definitely one of the better games that I've seen him play. So overall, I think our two substitutes played better than some of the guys that were on for the entire match. So both of them did fairly well, and I was glad to see them come on.
Okay, very good. David, over to you.
Yeah, they both made positive contributions in the short time they're on, but they're only on for a short time, so they had nothing to lose. Obviously, coming on as a sub, you want to impress, don't you? So you'd like to see a lot of effort in that short time. But I'm going to give them both 6.5, I think, because they made, you know, positive contributions to the game. And it obviously going to beg some interesting questions again for Wednesday now as to how we set ourselves up.
Absolutely. No, good stuff. Definitely agree with you. Okay, I'm just going to do this real quick. Guys, we are running short of time. I just want to mention the man of the match. You guys all have Scott Parker as the man of the match on the College Talk Facebook page. I do have a couple of comments on it. Alex Lowy had Matt Smith. James Dowden also had Matt Smith. And our friend Roger Lewis has Kostas Stafalidis as his man of the match. So just wanted to mention that. And, David, I'm going to go right back to you again. We are short of time. Give me about 30 seconds to 45 seconds on Kit.
Well, obviously, this is a Kit and Kerbishy thing. There certainly was a marked change into how we set up. And I think if Ruiz was dropped and the formation was picked because of the pitch and the formation was changed, because, you know, to try and amend things, you've got to give him great marks. If he only left Ruiz out because he was injured and he was planning to play him, then I wouldn't rate him as highly. But we'll never know that. I think overall, it's kind of a middling kind of thing with, you know, middling to good. So I'm going to give him 7 out of 10.
Okay. Going to give him 7 out of 10. Mike Gregg, Kit.
I'm actually, I'll give him an 8. And maybe with brackets, one for Kerbishley, maybe, you know, an assist.
Okay.
Possibly. but, you know, you
so
can't
you think,
him,
So you,
know,
think, you think the Kerbishley influence is happening here, Mike?
Yeah, I think so. I think,
okay.
You know, a reversion to 4-4-2, go with the two full-backs, you know, let's get solid after last week's disaster. I think Kerbishley had some kind of say in that team.
Okay. Michael Connor, over to you.
Kit's going to get a 7.5 from me. I really think that he is simply just having some growing pains, having his first ever proper managerial season, and dealing with the team that he was given and the circumstances that he's in. So I think that we're seeing him really start to wise up a little bit, even though it's painfully slow at times. But I still put my faith in Kit, and I don't see any other better option at this point in time. And I think if there's any talks about him being sacked, I think those should be pushed under the rug and forgotten about, personally. So he gets a 7.5 for me.
Okay, very good. Guys, great show, and thank you so much, the three of you, for doing this. This is actually a treat for me because I've had a long weekend, and talking film with you guys for 90 minutes really has been tremendous. So thank you to all three of you. You guys were all great. Unfortunately, we do not have enough time to raid Sheffield Wednesday or the ref, unfortunately, because we are running short of time. But that's because you guys really, really brought it today with some really good stuff, and I really appreciate it. Excellent show. I can't say enough good things about this show. David, I'll be talking to you soon, my friend. Excellent show, David.
Thanks, Ross. Yeah, speak to you soon, no doubt. And
okay, and Mike Gregg, you know, as I always say this, you're welcome anytime, my friend. Talk about treats. It's always a treat having you on.
Cheers, Ross, and it's good being on, and thanks to the rest of the guys as well.
Okay, fantastic. And Mike O'Connor, you know, again, always enjoy talking to you, Mike, and, you know, hopefully maybe this summer we can meet up again. Maybe in Jacksonville we'll be doing that again. Hopefully fall we'll be going back to Jacksonville, because I'd like to meet up with you again, my friend.
That'd be great. It'd be a great time. And thank you for hosting the show, because without you, it wouldn't be going on. So,
all right. Well, thanks. Really, thank you, Mike. This show is my pride and joy. I enjoy doing this and enjoy doing it with all my co-hosts. But it's time to wrap it up. For David, Mike, and Mike, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
See you, Mike.
The faraway town, now war is declared, and battle come down. London calling to the underworld, come out of the cover.